Track 3, Hospitalization. On the last track, we discussed several examples of clients suffering from disassociation. The examples discussed were those who feel numb, those who use pain to reassure themselves of their own existence, and those who view the pain as a penance for wrongdoing. Also, we talked about two techniques that can be used to help clients better cope with their disassociation: the before, during, and after technique, and the mirroring technique. On this track, we will examine the consequences of badly executed hospitalization, such as feelings of isolation, a discharge without being truly cured of the dilemma, and belittling the self-injurer. As you know, many people view self-mutilation as an oddity and view the population as untreatable. The innate human instinct towards self-preservation makes self-injury seem inexplicable and even terrifying. 17-year-old John, after staying in a psychiatric hospital for over 4 months, felt that the attitude of the staff was one of detachment and fear. John stated, "The feeling I elicited from them, though not intended, was horror. Oh my goodness, why would you do that? They didn't say it to my face, but their indirectness told me that they didn't want to have too much to do with me." Because of his vulnerable stage in adolescence, John's experience in the hospital left him with a feeling of isolation from the rest of the world. Instead of better adapting to it, he fell even further into depression and anxiety until he sought more therapeutic aid. Some of the doctors in the medical field who have even attempted to work with self-mutilating patients have taken the position that self-injury is an untreatable disease, much like alcoholism. Many times this is a result of abhorrence of the condition. Sometimes hospital treatment only focuses on the act of self-injury itself, how dangerous it is to harm one's body, what a toll it takes on the client and the people around them, how aberrant or bad it is to take arms against one's own skin. In John's case, he was trying to convey a message through his self-mutilation. John stated, "I've thought, I'll show them just how worthless I am and how much I hurt myself." A lot of people thought it was a suicidal attempt, which it really was not at all. John's disease was much more mentally internalized, and by merely treating the symptoms, his cuts and bruises, he was never really cured of the incentive to self-mutilate, as one might guess. To help John become more aware of the emotional dynamics involved in his self-injury behavior, I found the feelings awareness exercise to be beneficial. I asked John to answer the following questions about his self-mutilating behavior. Number 1, what feelings and fantasies do I typically have prior to, during, and after an episode of self-mutilation? Number 2, what feelings have I wanted to create in others through this? And number 3, what feelings do I elicit from others even if I don't intend to? Here's John's answers. "I wanted to leave a mark on myself in some way. I like having the scars. They tell people, 'Look at me, I'm hurting.' I wanted them to help me. Usually they just think I'm incredibly sick and deranged." The ability to identify the feelings and thoughts that led up to an episode of self-injury helped John conquer the behavior by placing its origins in the proper context. As your self-mutilating clients have probably related to you, hospital doctors may tend to misunderstand self-injury. Some see it as a random or chaotic type of behavioral expression, not, as I believe it to be, a condition with complex and hidden meanings that can be clarified during therapy. Cynthia, age 19, related a situation in which she self-mutilated during her hospitalization. It reached such a frenetic peak, her doctors ordered she be put in 4-point restraints. Cynthia told me, "Sure, it prevented me from hurting myself, but I felt so humiliated. I mean, they had me spread eagle on the bed. It put me in a very vulnerable position and made me even more anxious than I was before. By immobilizing her, Cynthia describes herself as regressing into a state of total dependence on the hospital staff. Cynthia's grueling trial, in fact, worsened her tendency to self-injure, and she soon was trapped in a vicious cycle common to repeated hospitalizations. As her anxiety from being in a psychiatric hospital increased, so did the frequency of her self-mutilation, thus lengthening her hospital stays. When Cynthia was finally referred to me, she had had a cumulative hospitalization of a year and a half in the past 3 years. Often the desire to self-injure comes so quickly and unpredictably, the only way to keep from relapsing to self-harm is to deal with that impulse almost immediately, to keep clients in a controlled path towards healing, but at the same time giving them free rein to orchestrate this healing themselves. I find the impulse control log beneficial. To aid John and Cynthia in regaining control of themselves after their damaging stays in a hospital, I ask them to make a grid on a blank sheet of paper and place 9 categories running across the top. Number 1, acting out self-injury thoughts. 2, date and time. 3, location. 4, situation. 5, feeling. 6, what would be the result of self-injury. 7, what would I be trying to communicate with my self-injury. 8, action taken, and 9, outcome. One of Cynthia's impulse control logs look like this. Self-injury thoughts, cutting and burning. Date and time, July 20th, 5:30 p.m. Location, living room of my friend and her family. Situation, I was watching my friend's family get along so well. Feeling, disappointed, alone, upset, angry. What would self-injury accomplish? Scars. What would I be trying to communicate through my self-injury? That I wish my family was close and that I felt alone. Outcome. I started talking to people and challenged thoughts of hurting myself. Comments. I noticed a decrease in my desire to cut. As you can see by writing out and communicating to herself about her impulses, Cynthia was more able to readily combat her urges. Think of your John or Cynthia. Could they benefit from an impulse control log? On this track, we discuss the consequences of badly executed hospitalizations, such as a feeling of isolation, a discharge without being truly cured of the dilemma, and belittling the self-injurer. On the next track, we will examine why adolescents are so vulnerable to the guiles of self-mutilation. These reasons include a drive for perfection, triggers from childhood, and the construction of identity. Question 3. What are 3 ways in which hospital tactics can worsen a self-injurer's condition?